ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनमपि शचीपुत्रमत्रस्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमुरुपुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिकामाधवाशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रतितः कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतःपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनतन्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता शिवशाखान्वितांश्च। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Considering tirthas, presently I'm discussing sadhus as tirthas, considering tirthas, crossing places, what is the significance of that? If we can cross out of this material world into the spiritual world, what is the significance of that? We might not take it to be very significant, we may not realize the significance of it, because we who are fortunate to be in the association of Vaishnavas, we regularly discuss such topics, and for us it seems a very normal thing. You might find a group of mountaineers who discuss among the, in their conversations, they discuss, yeah, we remember when we went up Everest together, and we went that expedition to the Andes, and for them it's a normal thing climbing mountains. For a common man or someone who's not a mountaineer, it would seem impossible. But for them it becomes not exactly an ordinary thing, because it's always a challenge to climb a mountain. And if we don't take it as a challenge, then we get in trouble. Have to be careful all the time. But it's their life, and they just, for them, what is extraordinary becomes relatively ordinary. Of course, climbing mountains is completely useless, waste of time. Once in Dubai, Nanda Kumar introduced me to a devotee. He said, oh, he just came back from climbing Mount Everest. And I said to him, completely useless waste of time. It's the first time I ever met him. He's initiated by me now. So let's consider, what is the significance? How many atoms are there in the universe? We don't have Sri Ramcharanaravinda. You can look it up on the internet. But who knows anyway? Who can say? Can we even begin to estimate? How many atoms are there in the universe? It's just, if you wanted to put it 10 to the power of something, the something would fill up half the universe. 10 to the power of what? Infinity. And then you don't need the 10, it's just infinity. That's from our perspective, it's infinity. We've had more births than that. Think about it. Sometimes we become very interested. What was I in my previous life? I just got an email from a godbrother saying that he hasn't in this life had any experience in dealing with guns, but when someone gives him a gun, he can immediately, he's very comfortable with it. And the same things, first time he was given a bow and arrow, he was completely expert. And first time he got on a horse, he just immediately, he knew how to handle a horse. That means from previous life, he was probably in what, World War I, they still had, can you imagine, they still had armed cavalry. So they may, I don't know if they had archery, but they were going, cavalry in the sense of getting on horses. The Polish troops came on horses and the Germans came with tanks. No, there was the Second World War, there was the cavalry left over from the First World War. So it may have been something in the last life. But what the hell does it matter? We've had millions of lives. People become very interested. What was I in my last life? Which life? So many lives. So many lives. We think, oh yeah, I've been here for a long time. And we start to imagine, yeah, this life, that life. But it's beyond our imagination how many lives. A common analogy is given of crossing the ocean of material existence. Ocean means huge. How can you cross an ocean? You have to have a very good ship to do that. Can give an analogy from Srila Prabhupada's boarding the Jaladuta, the ship Jaladuta, in Calcutta. Then sail down the east coast of India and harbored for one day in Colombo, and then came around Kanyakumari, Cape Comorin, and came up to Kochi and stopped there again. So up to this point, it'd been close to land, just slightly off. But then from Kochi, they went out into the sea, Arabian Sea. And after a short time, I think it would take, I'm not sure, one, maximum 2 days. They must have come close to the Arabian Peninsula. So again, they were close to land. Otherwise, there was sea on all sides. But actually, there'd be other vessels also, because it's a common shipping route. Then they came to Aden through the Suez Canal, which means there's land on both sides, clearly visible. And then they stopped in Port Said and then went into the Mediterranean. And the Mediterranean also, it's, you're never very far from land. I'm not sure, I've never sailed there, but probably on a clear day, you can see land at least on one side, wherever you are sailing the Mediterranean. And then came past Gibraltar and then out into the Atlantic Ocean. And then there's no land anywhere near. For days and days and days, and on a clear day, all you can see is water. Of course, it's a busy shipping route, so you might see other ships. But many times there might not be any. And you just go for days and days and days and miles as far as you can see, only water. And if you're not a seasoned voyager, then you probably start to feel very uncomfortable. Even though you have faith that the ship is safe and you have enough food, in other words, there's no threat to your life or any such thing, but you start to feel very uncomfortable and then you feel some relief when you come to the land. Srila Prabhupada came to the land, first landed in, I think they stopped in New York first, and then they went to Boston, and then whatever. If they'd gone a little further south, they could have come to Panama, gone through the Panama Canal, out into the Pacific Ocean, which is even much, much bigger, much wider than the Atlantic Ocean. That's a long sail. So you go over so many days, just water, water, water. Okay, think of all the water in the Pacific Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, what other oceans are there? The Indian Ocean, the Arctic Ocean. Put them in the Arabian Sea and this and that. Put it all together. Now, how many lives have we had? How many tears have we wept in pain? Those tears are more than all the water on the earth. If you think, unlimited lifetimes, we're simply crying and crying and crying. We come into this world crying, and we end it crying. And then again, and again, and again, in the Bhagavatam, that's mentioned, there's this material world is an ocean of tears, our own tears. That's why tirthas are so important. But we don't recognize the significance because we're engrossed in what Srila Prabhupada referred to as our spot life. This life is just a spot. If you put a line with all that's supposed to show a timeline of all our births, then each birth is just like a little spot. You might even have to get a microscope to see it even. But we take it so seriously that this is of such importance. We're just here momentarily, but we take it so seriously. So we don't realize the importance of getting free from birth and death. Over and above that is love of Krishna. The tears of love for Krishna that Srila Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Devotion, that somehow we should learn to cry for Krishna. If we cry for Krishna, then that's perfection. Of course, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also spoke of the sahajiyas who make a show of crying as if they're in love for Krishna. He wrote that the crying of the sahajiyas washes away all scriptural conclusions. So real feelings of love for Krishna. But how merciful is Krishna that he provides tirthas? He provides so many ways to try to bring us back to him. That's why this Bharatavarsha is so important, because here there are so many tirthas, holy rivers, holy people. Krishna consciousness can be practiced in any part of the world. But there's a special advantage in this land because that culture is there. The atmosphere is there. And generally people who are born here, they're born because in a previous life or previous lives, they've come to a level where they're ready to integrate with that Vedic culture. And you'll find even the demons who are described in the Bhagavatam, to some extent, they followed the Vedic culture. Just they got their orientation wrong. And nowadays, if you say orientation, you think of sexual orientation. Because the whole, that's why I say in the English language, the English, it's connected with the culture. And the present culture of the Western world is grossly absorbed in sexuality, ridiculously. Anyway, even the demon. I was just, thanks to Bill Gates and Microsoft, I'm one of millions of people whose computer is suffering from chronic difficulties. So, and someone else's computer as a kind of at least semi-spiritual time pass. I was watching an old Hindi movie, very nice actually, Sita's Wedding, very devotional. And I just noted that even Ravana there calls his wife Devi. So some culture for the demons also. And you find also in the description of the demons with Mohini Murti, they didn't want to argue with her because they thought it's wrong to argue with a woman. And even the Deem Bali Maharaj became powerful by following the Brahmanas of the Bhrigu dynasty headed by Shukracharya. The Western culture of the present time is very low and fallen, and it's pretty much always been low and fallen, but it's getting worse. And we wonder, can it get worse? And whenever we think it's at the bottom, it goes down more in ways that we couldn't imagine. Who could imagine that in the schools in the Western countries, they would teach children that don't think of yourself or a boy as a boy or a girl, and later you can decide. You can have a sex change. If you're a boy, you don't want to be a boy, you have a sex change operation. Hare Krishna. Unfortunately, that culture is severely impacting Bharata also. But still, Srila Prabhupada writes that Varnashram culture can very easily be revived in Bharatavarsha at any time. It's just there, below the surface. I was just listening to something that Bhavananda Maharaj, as he was known at the time, in Mayapur. He was based in Mayapur. And he was discussing about Bengalis, and someone was saying to him, well, they seem to be very angry and badly behaved. And he said, yeah, they're angry because they're intelligent and they're told that they're God, but then they have to cram up in some sweaty train and go to work and do some horrible, nasty job. And they're thinking they're God and they're frustrated. But he said that even the most, what was the word he used? Recalcitrant. Look it up in dictionary translator. Means stubborn, obstinate, fixed in his wrong path. Even the most recalcitrant, that's the word he used, Bhavananda. Recalcitrant communist. If you just chant Hare Krishna a little bit with them, then they'll also join you in chanting. He said he'd had that experience many times. So Bharatavarsha is very special. And Srila Prabhupada spoke about this and wrote about it many times. Actually, one time, this I remember Bhumna, godbrother of ours from Canada, who spent many years in India. So I remember him relating once that Prabhupada had once said that his Western disciples would have to take birth in India before they can go back to Godhead. And I thought, well, that doesn't sound right. But then I heard it from someone else also. So it may be more than a rumor. Anyway, this we know for sure. Srila Prabhupada put this in writing in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 19, Text 25, making the point that Bharat is special because of the culture and the holy places are special because of the pure devotees. Srila Prabhupada writes, in Bharatavarsha one has the opportunity to visit many holy places. Now by holy places, that English term that covers the dhams and the tirthas and the temples and the rivers and the holy mountains. So in Bharatavarsha one has the opportunity to visit many holy places, especially Lord Chaitanya's birth site and Lord Krishna's birth site, Navadvip and Vrindavan, where there are many pure devotees who have no desire other than to execute devotional service, and the abhilashita shunyam jnana kama dhyanavritam. And one may thus become free from the bondage of material conditions. So Srila Prabhupada said there are many devotees in Vrindavan and Navadvip who have no other desire than to execute devotional service. And if you think about it, well, that's a fact. So many people go to live there. Why? Why do they go to live there? What's the attraction? They go there because they want to be devotees. Right? What other reason have you got to go to be there? I wrote In the book I made, the On Pilgrimage in Holy India, I wrote a dedication to Srila Prabhupada. And once, some years ago, someone was introducing me to a group of devotees I was going to speak to, and he said that, well, in my pilgrimage book, I had dedicated it to Srila Prabhupada, saying that by Prabhupada's mercy, I'd been able to visit so many holy places. But that's not what I wrote. He got it wrong. I wrote, my dedication to that book is, dedicated to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder, Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, whose association is more valuable than visiting millions of holy places. There's a big difference, isn't there? By the mercy of the Guru, you can go and visit holy places. But He Himself is more than so many holy places. Dure Varyayanam Tirtham. I must have quoted that in this series. In the Bhagavatam, it said that in Kali Yuga, people think that you have to go to a long distance to go to a holy place. And Srila Prabhupada, quoting this, would often give the example that people in Calcutta go to Haridwar to bathe in the Ganga. The Ganga is right there in Calcutta. But they think if you go a long way, then it's more spiritual. And of course, Haridwar is famous as a particularly holy place, and Calcutta isn't. Unless you take offering goats at Kalighat to be very holy. But Haridwar has its specialty. So the point, that's the point to be understood. This section is sadhus are tirthas. You may not have to go far to see them. It's not a question of going a long distance. A long distance, they'll take you, that's the whole idea, they'll take you a long distance if you're willing to go. They live somewhere else. Where did Prabhupada live? He was born in Calcutta. He was raised in Calcutta. Later he went to live in Allahabad. And then later he traveled in different, and he traveled a lot in North India and even South India, and then he traveled all over the world. Where did he live? Well, let's read what Gadadhar Pandit said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Tumi jaha jaha raho taha brindabon, taha jamuna ganga sharva tirthagon. Wherever you stay is Vrindavan, as well as the river Yamuna, the river Ganga, and all other holy places of pilgrimage. Where did Prabhupada live? He lived in Vrindavan. He left Vrindavan, did he? Yes, otherwise how did he come to New York? But he brought Vrindavan to New York and to the world. He brought Vrindavan with him. I'll read from the, I read it, it's quite a long purport to this verse. I read part of it a couple of days ago. I'll read some more from it now, from the beginning. It was not essential for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to go to Vrindavan, for wherever he stayed was immediately converted to Vrindavan. And devotees had that experience with Srila Prabhupada, that just in his presence, it was the spiritual world. One anecdote, among many, 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 this was told by Tejas Prabhu, who you know, he stayed here for how long? Several months. A year? Not quite that long. So he and Mahamsa Swami and Hansaduta Swami were the three managers appointed by Srila Prabhupada to manage the farm just outside Hyderabad. And they didn't get on with each other. Neither got on with the other two. It wasn't that there were two who got on, and there was no, also they couldn't get on with any of them. So one morning, Tejas Prabhu came with a whole list of complaints in his mind about the other two, came to see Srila Prabhupada, that little hut that Prabhupada stayed in. as it happened, the other two happened to come at the same time with the same idea of complaining about the other two. So they all went in together, bowed down, and Prabhupada was sitting there chanting japa. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Just chanting. And all three of them, Tejas spoke for himself, but the others obviously were feeling so, just, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, chanting. He was in the spiritual world. He's in a completely different platform of consciousness. And they also, just sitting there, what are you going to do? Prabhupada, could you stop chanting? I want to complain about that guy sitting there. No question. They all got out their beads and chanted. And Prabhupada went on chanting for them. And they were chanting also, just chanting on their beads. Then after some time, Prabhupada said, just chant Hare Krishna. All problems will go away. And then they didn't have anything else to say. And they left. And again, they didn't get on with each other. But at least for that time, he transported them to the spiritual world. There's so many anecdotes. Like so many devotees had that experience of being in Prabhupada's presence. They weren't in the material world anymore. There are so many. Oh, I'll tell one more. This is fairly well known because there were so many devotees present at that time. This was at the Bhagavad Dharma discourse series that Srila Prabhupada had in New Vrindavan. It's quite early, about 1971, something like that. Over Janmashtami, and many devotees came, and there was, you can hear the kirtan actually, part of it's recorded. Of Vishnujan Swami is leading the kirtan, and devotees had that experience with his kirtans. They're in the spiritual world. So Prabhupada sitting on the stage, Vishnujan, I'm not so aware he is, he's leading the kirtan. And you can hear Vishnujan's in complete ecstasy, devotees are in ecstasy. Then in the recording, you can just hear all the devotees. Ah, and then you hear Prabhupada's voice, and Prabhupada takes over leading the kirtan. And Sureshwar Prabhu described, and it's in Vyasaki Prabhu's book, that Radha Damodar Vilas, how it was like there were rains of bliss just flooded. Everyone was in complete, total love of God. In that kirtan, as Prabhupada was, especially when Prabhupada took, already they were absorbed, and then as Prabhupada chanted, it was just like the whole spiritual world opened up. They had that experience. So when we say that the sadhus take us over to the spiritual world, it doesn't mean only you die and you go. But even here, if we're so fortunate, and that we can have now also, we don't have to think, well, Prabhupada's not here, and what am I going to do? It's up to us. As much as we connect with the mercy, Prabhupada left this world, his mercy is still here, he's still here, if we want to take his association. Only thing is, we have to make some more effort to connect with him. Anyway, continuing. Wherever he stayed, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was immediately converted to Vrindavan. Indeed, at that place were also the river Ganga, the river Yamuna, and all other places of pilgrimage. This was also expressed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself when he danced in the Rath Yatra. At that time he said that his very mind was Vrindavan, Moramon Vrindavan. Because his mind was Vrindavan, all the pastimes of Radha and Krishna were taking place within himself. Actually, the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, they're going on in everyone's heart. The Lord is in the heart. Generally, that's said that that's Vishnu form. But Prabhupada said that, well, if you worship Krishna, he'll manifest as Krishna. Where there's Krishna, there's Radha, there's Vrindavan, there's a whole spiritual world. So it's there, we just have to find our way, become one with our heart. Nonetheless, just to teach people, he visited Bhoma Vrindavan, Vrindavan Dham in this material world. In this way, the Lord instructed everyone. In this way, the Lord instructed everyone to visit Vrindavan Dham, which is a very holy place. Materialists consider Vrindavan Dham an unclean city because there are many monkeys and dogs there, and along the bank of the Yamuna there is refuse. Some time ago, a materialistic man asked me, "Why are you living in Vrindavan? Why have you selected such a dirty place to live after retiring?" This was before Srila Prabhupada came to the West. Such a person cannot understand that the earthly Vrindavan Dham is always a representation of the original Vrindavan Dham. Consequently, Vrindavan Dham is as worshipable as Lord Krishna. Aradhyo Bhagavan Vrajesha Tanayas Tadhama Vrindavanam. According to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy, Lord Sri Krishna and his abode, Vrindavan, are equally worshipable. Sometimes materialistic people who have no spiritual understanding go to Vrindavan as tourists. One who goes to Vrindavan with such materialistic vision cannot derive any spiritual benefit. And just we were reading that Prabhupada said that even anyone who goes to Vrindavan, they'll be affected by the atmosphere. So apparently contradictory, but not actually. That's just sometimes Srila Prabhupada understates, just like we read Vrindavan Dham, a very holy place. Massive understatement. And here there may be an overstatement, but the point is that definitely anyone who goes to Vrindavan will get some benefit, but it depends on our attitude also. Such a person is not convinced that Krishna and Vrindavan are identical. Since they are identical, Vrindavan is as worshipable as Lord Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's vision, Mormon Vrindavan, is different from the vision of an ordinary materialistic person. Sometimes materialists, forgetting the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and Krishna Balaram, go to Vrindavan, accept the land's spiritual facilities and engage in material activity. This is against the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Prakriti Sahajiyas proclaim themselves Rajavasis or Dhamavasis, but they are mainly engaged in sense gratification. Thus they become more and more implicated in the materialistic way of life. Those who are pure devotees in Krishna consciousness condemn their activities. The eternal Vrajvasis, like Swarup Damodar, did not even come to Vrindavan Dham. So Prabhupada's repeating. We read the other day about Narottam Thakur and others who didn't come to Vrindavan. Sri Pundarika Vidyanidhi, Sri Haridas Thakur, Srivas Pandit, Shivananda Sen, Sri Ramananda Rai, Sri Shiki Mahiti, Sri Madhavi Devi, and Sri Gadadha Pandit Goswami never visited Vrindavan Dham. Srila Bhakti Siddhant Saraswati Thakur points out that we have no authorized documents stating that these exalted personalities visited Vrindavan. Nonetheless, we find many non-devotees, Mayavadi sannyasis, Prakriti Sahajiyas, fruitive workers, mental speculators, and many others with material motives going to Vrindavan to live. Many of these people go there to solve their economic problems by becoming beggars. Although anyone living in Vrindavan somehow or other is benefited. You see? Prabhupada said, one who goes to Vrindavan with such materialistic vision cannot derive any spiritual benefit. Later in the purport, he writes that, anyone living in Vrindavan somehow or other is benefited. The real Vrindavan is appreciated only by a pure devotee. So that's the point again. You get some benefit. You go you go to a rich man and ask him for 10 rupees. You can ask him for 10 crores. So if you go to, it's insignificant, 10 rupees. How much does a limca cost? Must be more than 10 rupees. I don't know. Anyone know? Hope you don't know. Do they still manufacture limca? Don't know. It used to be something that kept the Western devotees alive in the summers in India. Back in. still available, yeah. So if you say there's no benefit, it's true. There's some benefit, it's also true. But the real Vrindavan is appreciated only by a pure devotee, as stated in the Brahma Sanhita. Primanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. When one has purified eyes, he can see that Sri Vrindavan and the original Goloka Vrindavan planet in the spiritual sky are identical. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu always saw Krishna and Vrindavan. There are several quotes from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, how pure devotees, they always see Krishna. Stava, this is one that Prabhupada quoted several times. Stava rajangam deke na deke tar murti sarvatra hoy nidja ishta deva svurti. That someone in Krishna consciousness sees everything in this world, moving and non-moving, but he doesn't, he sees that, but his real vision is everywhere he sees the Lord and Master of his life. So about going to holy places, well, the real point is to see Vrindavan. And the example is given there, Sarup Damada, Pundarika Vidyanidhi, Gadadha Pandit. All the 3.5 most intimate devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sarup Damada, Ramananda Rai, Shikhi Mahati, and Madhavi Devi, they're all mentioned in this list. There's no record of them going to Vrindavan. So what's better, to be Sarup Damodar? Of course we can't be Sarup Damodar, but who's better situated? Sarup Damodar, who never went to Vrindavan, or Prakriti Sahajiyas and materialists who live in Vrindavan? I think the answer is clear. In this regard, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in a series of songs which go under the heading Upadesha, from Kalan Kalpataru, there's a series of songs in which he warns about various anartas or various states of consciousness which are pratikul, antithetical to advancement in devotional service. And then generally in the first line, he gives the idea what the whole song about. Monare kino miche bhajitcho ashar. Why mon? He's saying to his mind, why are you worshipping that which is false and without substance? So that's the introductory song. Everything in this material world is false and without substance. Why do you put so much emphasis on that? Then the next thing, why are you so mon tumi bhalobasho kame taranga? Why do you make your love on the waves of material lust? And he goes on to explain that. Tumi boro shondigda anto, and then addressing having so many doubts inside about Krishna consciousness. Mon tumi bori pamo, you're a big sinner. Then, again, why do you have this doubt and not worship Krishna? And he goes on, and he talks about the idea of becoming a yogi, the idea of becoming a big scholar, the idea of being a sannyasi. All these different desires may arise in the heart, the idea of being very puffed up due to one's high birth. What else we got? Bidya gaurab. Oh, the pride of thinking oneself very beautiful. The pride of wealth. The thinking of wealth as being very important. And in Song 14, he sings, Mon tumi tirte shodaroto, Ajodha, Mathura, Maya, Kashi, Kanchi, Abantiya, it's written here, Darabati, Ar Ache Jato. So he lists 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, yeah, the seven Moksha Puris, you just heard the names, Ayodhya, Mathura, Maya, which means Haridwar, Kashi, Kanchi, Avantika, it's written here. Maybe that's a misspelling, it's generally Avantika, nowadays known as Ujjain, and Dwara, Dwaravati, Dwaraka, and so many others, he says, Ar Acheja, all the others. Tumi Chaho Brahmi Bare, Eshokal Bare Bare. You want, he's addressing his mind, you want to go to these places again and again. Mukti lab kori patore, for the sake of getting liberation. They're the Moksha Puris, after all. And it's recommended in the Shastra. You go to these places and you get liberation. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, She kebal tava brahm. That's only your mistake. Now, interesting here, Brahman means to travel, to go from, and brahm means mistake. So it's a pun, play on words. Sheshokal tava brahm, nirartak parishram. It's just useless labor. Chitta stira tirte nahi kari. Make your mind steady to not go to holy places. Well, this whole discussion is of Krishna making the holy places. How merciful he is. Let's read on. Tirtha phala sadhu sangha sadhu sange antaranga Sri Krishna bhajan manohar. So he says, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the whole point of going on pilgrimage, the fruit of that is association with devotees by which one can get into the depths and the essence of that, of worshipping Krishna, which is delightful to the mind. Jata sadhu tata tirtha. Where there is a sadhu, there is a tirtha. Stira kari nijya chitta. Just calm down, cool down, understand. This is the fact. Sadhu sangha karo niranta. And take association to devotees. Constantly, jai tirte vaishnav nai, shei tirtete nahi jai. In that holy place where there are no Vaishnavas, I don't go there. So that's the point. He's not saying don't go to any tirtha, but don't go to a tirtha where there are no Vaishnavas. Ki lab hatiya duradish. What benefit do you get by walking such a long distance and there's nothing there? We can't say nothing there, but the real thing is to get sadhu sangha. So if there's not there, then what's the point? And then jatai vaishnavgan shishta na Vrindavan. Where there are Vaishnavas, that place is Vrindavan. So either he's Bhaktivinoda Thakur is living in Calcutta. So it's Vrindavan. He's living there. He's living there. He can take his association. Of course, his association is not prakat at the present time. It's not directly manifested. Jatai Vaishnavgan Sheshtana Vrindavan Sheshtane Ananda Ashish. In that place there's unlimited bliss. Krishna Bhakti Jeshtane Mukti Dashi Sheikane Shalil Tatai Mandakini. Where there is Krishna Bhakti, then Mukti Dasi. She comes there as a servant. And that we, that Prabhupada often used to quote, isn't it? Mukti, what was that? Mukti Swayamanjali Sevate Sma. That, quoting from Bilva Mangal Thakur, that if I'm fully absorbed in pure devotional service to Krishna, then Mukti Devi comes, folding her hands, and offers herself in my service. You want me to serve you? You want Mukti? Whereas others are trying to get her mercy. Mukti Swayam. Then Shalila Tatai Mandakini, wherever there are devotees, that water is the water. Ganga Mandakini. Giri Tata Govardhan. And the hill there is Govardhan. Any hill, you can say Govardhan. In other words, it all becomes transcendental. The whole atmosphere is converted to the spiritual world. I gave some examples in Prabhupada's presence. Bhumi Tata Vrindavan. The land there is Vrindavan. Avibhuta Apani Haladini. And the bliss potency, Haladini, Radharani, she herself manifests there. Binodok Kahitche Bhai. Brahmaya ki falapai, Vaishnav Sevan Mora Brata. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaking to his brothers, to his mind, what will you get from wandering here and there? Make your vrata, your determination, because one who goes on pilgrimage has to make a vrata. While on this pilgrimage, I'll only eat once a day, and I'll only eat food cooked by my own hand, and there are so many vows you may take. So make this vow, Vaishnav Sevan Mora Brata, to serve the Vaishnavas. So that puts it into perspective. When we hear, don't go to Tirthas, that's the point being made. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur clarifies this for us as he clarifies so many points. I may have quoted this in this series of verses, but I'll quote it again, a well-known verse for those who are followers of Srila Prabhupada, as he quoted it several times. And from what I see, many of the verses that Srila Prabhupada quoted from Bhagavatam, many of them also appear in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So they may be common among all the Gauriya Vaishnavas, the ones that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave importance to, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami highlighted. Then mostly the Gauriya Vaishnavas, they know. These are their key verses. So, Ahobata Svapacho Togariyan Yajjivagre Vartate Namatubhyam Tapas Tapas Tejuhuvu Sasnur Arya Brahman Uchur Nama Grinanti Yete. So we're told that the Sanskrit of Bhagavatam is very difficult, but there are many words we can easily identify. Ahobata is, doesn't really mean it's an exclamation. Oh, svapacha, svapacha, not svapacha, svapacha, dog cooker. Ataha, gariyan, glorious, yad upon, in this case, jivagre, the tip of the tongue, vartate is present, nama, name, tubyam, yours, so like this. So the purport that Devahuti speaking to her son, Kapiladev, the Supreme Personality, oh, how wonderful it is that persons upon whose tongue your name is always present, even if they are from the lowest, most sinful class of people, because it's understood that people are born low birth due to sinful activities in the previous life, but they are glorious, and although you may not see so much culture in them, but it's understood that because they have your name on their tongue, it's understood that they've done all, they've visited all pilgrimage places, they've performed all austerities, all the activities of greatly civilized Aryans, because they're taking that name on their tongue. So again, it may not be necessary. But on the other hand, it's something like blaspheme. We don't blaspheme the demigods. We respect all the holy places. And certain people at a certain level, we may encourage them to go to holy places. But at the same time, we should understand that visiting holy places is not of the essence. We very much encourage devotees to visit Navadvip and Vrindavan. But at the same time, it's best to take people and speak to them and guide them so that they can understand it from an entirely spiritual, or begin to understand it from a spiritual perspective. And at the same time, we know that we have service to do all over the world, so we may not have the opportunity to live in Vrindavan or Navadvip, but we're not the losers for doing so. If we're actually fully engaged in Krishna's service anywhere in the world, here's an apocryphal story, which means I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard this first time I had the fortune to visit Sri Mayapur Dham in this lifetime in 1976. I heard this, that Srila Prabhupada had said that for a brahmachari, the most fortunate or the best position is to live in Mayapur. And better than that is to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. Better than best, if one has the opportunity. Again, there's the fairly well-known anecdote of devotees or disciples of Srila Prabhupada from the Western countries going from the site of Krishna Balaram Temple. I believe it wasn't fully constructed or opened at that time, but Prabhupada was staying there and living there. So devotees visiting Radharaman Temple, the Goswamis there from the very beginning, they had no reservations about the Western devotees. Right from the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they're very close to our whole line. Bhaktivinoda, Bhaktisiddhanta, and now Srila Prabhupada. So they're very open to that. So our devotee, one priest there, Pujari, was seeing two of Srila Prabhupada's Western sannyasis very devotedly taking darshan of Radharaman, and he commented to them that you have so much devotion. By the result of your devotion, in your next life, you could be born and as a pujari in India and worship. Like me, I guess. He didn't say like me, but the implication was there. So the devotees, they went back to Krishna Balaram Temple and related this to Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada said, you should tell him that as a result of his devotion, he may get the chance to get born in the Western countries and preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. So what's better? What's better is to be a pure devotee of Krishna, that's all. It really doesn't matter. In one sense, definitely birth in India is advantageous. But the real thing is if one has got pure devotion. And it really doesn't matter whether one is Western, Eastern, black, white, yellow, green, man, woman, old, young, educated, uneducated, or sarvo padivinir muktam tatparat vena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchyate. Bhakti, what is the meaning of it? To be free from all mundane designations and fully absorbed in service to the transcendental Lord, engaging one's senses in the service of that master of the senses. But still, to help us to come to that stage, there are holy places. But again, on the other hand, if we don't understand that, then we don't get the full benefit. And if we do understand that, then it may not be necessary for us to go to holy places. So it's, yes, this, that's true, but this. Ah, but this. and but this, and but, and when all the, when we say pure devotion to Krishna, then all the buts come to an end. You live in a holy place, not live in a holy place. And of course, still the devotees, they prefer to live in a holy place connected with Krishna. Pritis tadvasati stale. One of the symptoms of a devotee in bhava bhakti is that he very much likes to live in the places of where Krishna lives. But then again, that can be manifest in temples anywhere all over the world or in the heart of the devotee. So the point of sadhus, if we can get the association of sadhus who can carry us over, that's hinted at early in the Bhagavatam. Sushrusho shadadhanasya vasudeva katha ruchihi Sian Mahat Sevaya Viprath Punya Tirta Nishivanat. O twice born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely free from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudeva. Now we may wonder, Prabhupada says here, serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice. Where is that in the Sanskrit? Well, the commentators say that punya tirtha nishevanat, that refers to nishpapasya seva, that the service, or a service to persons who are free from all sins. So devotees, they're free from all sins. That's the name Srila Prabhupada gave to one of his disciples. Nishpapa. No sin. Anaga, we find in Gita, Krishna calls Arjuna more than once. Can anyone think of a verse? I can't offhand, but he does. There are some well-known verses, but none of us can remember. All three of us present here. Three, or a little more. Anyway, we can go and look it up and say, oh, why didn't I remember? Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30, Text 37, Tesham Vicharatam Padbhyam Tirthanam Pavane Chaya Bhitasya King Narocheta Tavakanam Samagamaha. Dear Lord, your personal associates, devotees, wander all over the world to purify even the holy places of pilgrimage. Is not such activity pleasing to those who are actually afraid of material existence? Okay, someone look up anaga in the meantime while I read the purport to this verse. That sadhus, it's stated here, they wander all over the world to purify even the holy places of pilgrimage. So the idea, if the sadhus can purify even the holy places, then what to speak of us sinful people? That's the idea. And those of us who are afraid of material existence. Srila Prabhupada's purport. By associating with persons for whom the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, is the all in all. Matsarvasva padam bhojo radha madana mohano sarvasva. For whom all in all. The lotus feet of Radha and Madan Mohan are my all in all. Srila Prabhupada translates this. Jayatam surato pangor mama manda mate gati matsarvasva padam bhojo Radha Madana Mohana. Very beautiful translation. I am lame and ill advised. Yet the lotus, I can't remember it fully. I'm lame and Jayatam Surato Pangam Mama Mandamat. But the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Manmohan are my be all and end all. I can't remember exactly. So The activities of Mukunda are so potent that simply by hearing of them, one immediately associates with the Lord. So who are we going to hear them from? Who's going to speak such things? We hear them from devotees who kindly travel on the surface of the world to speak such things. For a person who constantly and very eagerly hears narrations of the Lord's powerful activities, the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, in the form of sound vibrations, enters within his heart and cleanses it of all contamination. On the other hand, although bathing in the Ganga diminishes bodily contaminations and infections, this process and the process of visiting holy places can cleanse the heart only after a long time. Therefore, who is the sane man who will not associate with devotees to quickly perfect his life? In other words, if we don't take association of devotees, we're insane. Janiya shunya bishakainu. We're knowingly taking poison. If we consider how many lives we've been in this material world, how much we've suffered, we can't even imagine. And therefore, Krishna kindly manifests the tirthas, and even above that, the devotees, who will not associate with devotees, to quickly perfect his life. And the same point is there in the Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 18, Text 11. In the text, the very verse, bathing in the Ganga can certainly cure one of many infectious diseases, but it cannot cleanse one's materially attached mind, which creates all kinds of contaminations in material existence. And of course the Ganga can, but it is Gangara Parasha Hoile Paschate Pavan. It's an extended process. However, one who directly associates with the Supreme Lord by hearing of his activities cleanses the dirt from his mind and very soon comes to Krishna consciousness. So, on that hopeful note, vancha kalpa taru bhyascha kripa sindhu bhyavacha patitanam pavane bhyo vaishnave bhyo namo namaha.